Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Hoping you're having a very pleasant Friday. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. This past week, we've been looking at some of the statements made by Russell M. Nelson, who at the time he made the statement that we were citing from the Deseret News of September 2017, he was making a reference to passages that he feels in the Bible that foretell the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. More specifically, he's referring to Isaiah chapter 29 and also passages taken out of Ezekiel 37. Now, we've already looked at the Isaiah 29 passage, and in light of that, looked at what a BYU professor, a man by the name of Charles R. Harrell, has to say about it in his book, This Is My Doctrine. Because in this series, what we're trying to do is show you that even though there is a pat interpretation for some of these verses that Mormon leaders have handed down through the years, some scholars, when they do a little bit of homework, find out that the interpretation they've been given by their leaders doesn't usually fit the proper historical or textual context. And we do see this example in Harrell's book, This Is My Doctrine, The Development of Mormon Theology, that came out in 2011. Today we're going to be looking at Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 16 and 17.
Before I read this, Bill, we've been citing a lot, and I'm sure it might be confusing for some listeners to be able to understand everything that we've said because of all the citations. But you can get the PDF radio notes that we're using. We have all of these citations in this PDF. You can get that by making a donation of any size. Go to our website, mrm.org. On the right side, click on Donate, and just type in radio notes. We'll forward that to you so you can look at this closer if you're interested in this topic. And so this is what Ezekiel 37, 16 through 17 says. Moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companions. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companions, and join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand.
Now, I need to remind our listeners that this week we were citing from Russell M. Nelson's speech that he gave in General Conference in October of 2007. It was a talk titled Scriptural Witnesses. This is how he interprets the Ezekiel passage. He says, today, saints living in many nations of the earth gratefully hold the Bible, the stick of Judah, and the Book of Mormon, the stick of Ephraim, bound as one in their hands. That's how the Mormon Church generally interprets this passage out of Ezekiel 37. Of course, as we've been stating all week, this is not a plausible explanation, even though this has been an explanation that not only Russell M. Nelson holds to, but past leaders as well. What did Wilford Woodruff say? And I might mention, this quote that you are going to cite, Eric, is taken from Teachings of Presidents of the Church, Wilford Woodruff, a church manual correlated by the First Presidency that came out in 2004, and it's found on page 119.
It says, Ezekiel says that in the last days, the stick of Joseph in the hands of Ephraim should be placed with the stick of Judah before the eyes of the nations in the hands of the Lord for a special purpose, to gather the house of Israel in the latter days. See Ezekiel 37, 15 through 28. These two records were also to be made use of in order to preach the fullness of the everlasting gospel to both Jew and Gentile, and they will stand in judgment against the generation living on the earth when they come forth. Another manual, this is the Doctrine and Covenants and Church History Gospel Doctrine Teacher's Manual from 1999 on page 246, says, read Ezekiel 37, 15 through 19 with class members. Explain that the stick of Judah is the Bible and the stick of Ephraim is the Book of Mormon.
Let's go back and look very carefully where it says, moreover, thou son of man, take one stick, write upon it for Judah, for the children of Israel, his companions, take another stick, write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim. Now, if you understand the history of Israel and what we get from the book of Kings and such, we know that the northern tribes were made up of a majority of the tribes. 10 of the tribes belonged to the northern tribes. And then we had two, Judah and Benjamin, that made up the southern tribes. So we have Judah and Ephraim. Now, Judah is easy because Judah was the specific name of one of the tribes that made up the southern tribes. When it says Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, well, Ephraim is recognized by the Jews as being in the northern tribe. So it seems to be implying that it's talking about all of Israel, but it divides them according to the division that they had at this particular time. It wasn't always like that. That happened during the reign of King Rehoboam. They were together up until that time, and that's when they divided. But Israel was always known as one. But even though Israel was one nation, you might say, it was divided by the northern and southern tribes. We get that easily from reading the Old Testament. The point is when you talk about a stick, you have to ask yourself, is this stick referring to a book? And as I mentioned earlier in this week, you would think that if it was referring to a book, they would use a word in the Hebrew language that refers to a book. But they don't. It's a word that refers to a literal stick. So if you have a stick, if Ezekiel was supposed to take a stick and write upon it, we have to understand that he's probably got a literal piece of wood, and he's going to write on it how? Perhaps with a knife, engraving something on it, but it represented something. And there were two of these sticks. And one represents, we have to understand from the context, the northern tribes, and one had to represent, from the context, the southern tribes. Well, if you have two sticks that represent north and south, and you put them together in one hand, what is that supposed to symbolize? What was once divided is obviously going to be put back together. So all we have here is Ezekiel giving an illustrated sermon. But to read the word book into this is a little bit hard to believe. It just doesn't make sense, because if you go back in the Old Testament and you see that word that's used for stick here, you find that it's regularly used to represent a piece of wood, not a book, not even a scroll, because there's even a word for scroll in the Hebrew.
If the Mormon commentators are correct, then what is being said here hundreds of years before Christ would have had no meaning for any of those people during the Old Testament times, and not even any meaning for Jesus or beyond in the apostles. In fact, it wouldn't have had any meaning until the 19th century when Joseph Smith supposedly found the Book of Mormon.
Now, Harold gives an explanation of what he thinks these passages is talking about on page 93. What does he say?
Well, he acknowledges that the popular LDS interpretation of the passage is that the stick of Judah is the Bible, while the stick of Joseph or Ephraim is the Book of Mormon. And he says, scholars point out that each of the sticks Ezekiel refers to is no more than a piece of wood, hence the term stick, on which he was to inscribe a short phrase. It doesn't appear to have been a scroll or writing board on which a lengthy record might be kept. Many LDS scholars today concur with this contextual meaning and therefore see the traditional LDS interpretation as a secondary revealed meaning.
Now, there may be some Mormon scholars out there that look at it this way, as he describes, but I don't find those interpretations given preeminence. Do you? Eric,
no.
I mean, every time I read an explanation from a Mormon about Ezekiel 37, it seems to be pretty much the traditional understanding that we have heard for years and years. I mean, good grief. You cited Wilford Woodruff earlier. He's the fourth president of the church. So that goes back a long ways into the 19th century. So I would say that, okay, maybe you do have a few that might see it as a secondary understanding. You may even have a few Mormon scholars who don't even agree with the interpretation that has been given by the Mormon leadership. But the fact remains, what the leadership has been touting, and we would include Russell M. Nelson in this group, is certainly not true. It's a false interpretation. Now, in his interpretation, Eric, he mentions a scroll or a writing board. We talk about this in our book, Answering Mormon's Questions. What do we say this? Because we cite a Mormon scholar by the name of Brian Keck. What did Brian Keck have to say about this?
This is what he writes. He says, the basic problem for Mormon exegesis and the crux of the passage for Mormon and non-Mormon scholars alike is the meaning of the Hebrew word eights rendered by the King James translators as stick. The word eights spans the whole range of Semitic languages, yet its various meanings reveal extraordinary continuity between the different languages. The term generally refers to a tree, wood in general, firewood, and specific items made of wood. In Hebrew, the traditional semantic range is correspondingly broad, but again, the word basically means tree, wood, sticks, branches, firewood, and timber for building. Occasionally, it can refer to objects made of wood, such as a pole, the handle of an axe, gallows, idols, and vessels. Moreover, in post-biblical Hebrew, the term eights again refers to trees, different types of wood, a pole, the gallows, and a wooden pot ladle. Therefore, as far as our current lexical knowledge goes, the Hebrew eights does not refer to a writing board or document. Then he goes on and he says, the point of the whole passage in Ezekiel 37 is that just as Ezekiel brought two sticks together into one hand, so God will bring back the north and south kingdoms into their homeland to be ruled over by one leader, a Davidic descendant. By placing the Ezekiel passage into the context of the sign form, it becomes clear that Ezekiel's performance with the sticks was intended for the public and symbolized what God was planning to do, reunify the two kingdoms of Israel. Identifying the sticks of Ezekiel with Babylonian writing boards was a clever exegetical idea, but it does not hold up to a close inspection.
In other words, what Brian Keck is saying here is that is not a plausible explanation. And we've been emphasizing this throughout this series, but especially this last week. Plausible explanations is where we should be going if we're going to properly understand what the Bible is saying. Now, I mentioned earlier in this show about Apostle LeGrand Richards. Let me just read something that LeGrand Richards said in his book, A Marvelous Work and a Wonder. Citing Ezekiel 37:15-20, he said, in ancient times it was the custom to write on parchment and roll it on a stick. Now, I would say that LeGrand Richards is trying to be quite ingenious in how he's going to interpret this, because by talking about a scroll, scrolls normally did have wood in them. But he says, it was custom to write on parchment and roll it on a stick. Therefore, when this command was given, it was the equivalent of directing that two books or records should be kept. Now, the reason why I wouldn't go along with what LeGrand Richards is saying in this aspect is because that seems to go against the grain of what the historical context is giving us in Ezekiel 37. In other words, LeGrand Richards is making the same mistake that Russell M. Nelson makes in reading something into the text that was never meant to be understood in the first place. It would not have been something that Ezekiel was talking about. He's using a specific language. He's trying to get these thoughts across to the people he's addressing. And he's certainly not talking about books, as Mormons like Russell M. Nelson would like to believe.
Bottom line, Bill, I would say to the Latter-day Saint listeners, if you're going to have support for the Book of Mormon, please don't go to these two passages, because they do not give any kind of prophecy about the Book of Mormon.
And I think that's great advice. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.